Welcome to the GGB podcast. We're here at the ICE trade show in Barcelona, and my guest today is Sandra Moto, who's an attorney in the UAE, and we're going to talk about gambling in the UAE. Sandra, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Roger.
So let's start with how you got to the UAE and how it kind of evolved into the role you're in now.
Okay, so as you've kindly introduced me, my name is Sandra Moto. I'm the Chief Compliance Officer for a new company called Responsible Gaming MENA. And this company started just right after the regulator got its new regulatory framework a few months ago. So I joined, I went to the UAE about 8 years ago, and my background is actually in banking compliance.
Okay.
So I went to the UAE to start up a new function, like a regulatory compliance function in a bank, an Islamic bank. And when I joined, it was quite interesting understanding how regulation and Islamic practices actually go hand in hand. And after doing that role for quite a number of years, I decided to pivot into the gaming sector, given the opportunities that exist at the moment.
Okay, great. So I was very surprised when I saw that they were even considering legalizing gaming in UAE, just because it's always been so strict and the religious element that's going on there. But they decided to introduce commercial gaming. So how surprised were you when that happened?
So having been in the UAE for quite a number of years, I was equally surprised. It looked like something that would never happen. But when you look at the strategy of the country, so we have UAE vision. So mm-hmm. One of the vision is to explore and diversify its non-oil revenue.
Sure.
So they're looking at multiple things, tourism and hospitality being a key driver of that. So this fits in quite nicely, especially on the land-based casinos, and being able to offer people coming to the UAE things that other regions have to offer.
Sure.
So it's predominantly targeted at the revenue that can be obtained from the tourism and hospitality, and showing that the UAE is also open for business.
Mm-hmm.
Dubai, for example, you have lots of programs, Dubai Bling and
right.
Dubai Housewives, mm-hmm. and it's showing how open a country it is, and this is just one of the many
yeah.
ways to monetize that.
Okay. So let's go back to the basics. The UAE is a collection of seven nation states, correct?
Seven Emirates, yes.
Okay, and they will, not all of them will have gaming.
At the moment, it's going to be a very phased approach.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, the regulator has come in into a previously forbidden sector.
Okay.
So the rest of the world, in many countries, it's very mature, but it's very nascent in the UAE specifically. So they've got to take it gradually. Part of it is they've got to educate the wider public in terms of how it can be done in a safe and secure manner,
mm-hmm.
in a way that doesn't infringe on its cultural restrictions. That's important. Now, every emirate has to do what is comfortable for it. So whilst it's one nation,
mm-hmm.
each emirate has its own unique way of actually evolving.
Okay.
So I would say
that's not really unlike the United States, where each state has a different
very
way to regulate gaming.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Absolutely.
So the General Commercial Gaming Regulatory Authority is the one that's going to control gaming there. And I really think you're fortunate to have Kevin Mullally as the executive director there, and Jim Murren is the chairman. Both of those,
right.
Certainly Kevin has a lot of regulatory experience in the U.S. and Jim has all the corporate experience. How do you think it's going to proceed here in terms of companies being interested in the UAE and how they're going to be handled by the regulatory authority?
So like with anything, when the UAE gets into any sector, they want to be the best, they want to be the biggest. So this is a great opportunity for the UAE to showcase what it typically does to be a global best, so to be the best in class,
mm-hmm.
from a responsible gaming perspective,
sure.
in a way that protects you know, its end users, but also ensures that its operators operate within the confines of the regulation. One of the things that I think is incredible that the regulators are doing is they're bringing seasoned professionals from established markets
right.
to be able to help the market develop in the way that it needs to develop within the guidelines of what the nation requires. And I do go back to the cultural nuances that is very unique to right. the Middle East. And that is what I believe that the leaders are going to try and do. There's a maturity curve that we all need to respect,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a cross-educational opportunity. So we have people coming in from the UK, the US, with a lot of gaming knowledge, like the leaders, but also we have people like myself who have been in the UAE for a very long time that understand the way the country works.
Right.
Having worked in an Islamic bank, I understand how the culture and commerce and compliance being an enabler
mm-hmm.
and a supporter to ensure that we get the value that we need.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be a very collaborative effort, and we're very excited about what DCGRA are doing.
Mm-hmm.
The because of the people, the leaders and the helm, we are very confident that, you know, we are going to become a mature ecosystem in a way that's safe and in a way that the rest of the world will truly respect
right.
it as well.
Okay.
Exciting times.
Great. So why don't you give us a thumbnail idea of how you go through the regulatory process to get licensed in the UAE?
So the regulatory process is, I mean, it's quite obvious on the website,
mm-hmm.
but also there behind the scenes activities that go through. As you know, we've only had 6 licenses issued,
right.
and I believe it's intentional.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's the regulators want to take a slow and considered approach with everyone that's brought on in terms of their capabilities, but also in terms of are they the right fit for
mm-hmm.
the region as well. So firstly, you've got to express an interest on the website, and after that, they take you through the process internally. So I think it's quite straightforward, but you do need to have your robust controls in place.
Mm-hmm.
From the word on the street is that we need to be very careful with who we collaborate with,
right.
who we bring in.
Sure.
Their reputation is very important
mm-hmm.
because that collaboration would impact how
right.
it's perceived on the ground as well. And I think the regulators are doing an amazing job with the initial 6 licensees that they put on board.
Okay. That's exciting. So suppliers have to be licensed as well, I
assume. Absolutely. And anyone that wants to actively participate
mm-hmm.
As a vendor or a technology provider, they have to go through the license process. But the category is different. So even there's some key individuals within some of the licensed companies that also need to be licensed as well.
Okay. So one way the UAE is not taking it slow is as you're jumping into gaming in all the different venues, casino gaming, lotteries, iGaming, sports betting, that kind of thing. Do you think that's an advantage to do it that way?
So I would say starting with lottery is actually a good approach because
mm-hmm.
lottery is generally socially accepted.
Right.
Not just in the UAE, but also globally. You might say to a person, oh, do you game, do you gamble? And they're like, no, I don't. But do you play the lottery? Yes, I
right.
do.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually quite a wise way to take it gradual, starting from the lottery. Again, the lottery has quite positive effects. So someone can win, let's say, 100,000 dirham.
Mm-hmm.
The UAE we have a huge population of lower level workers, and
mm-hmm.
that 100,000 dirham will make a huge impact in their
sure,
home
right.
countries. They're building houses for their mothers and their siblings. So the winnings, you could see that there's a correlation towards good societal
right.
benefits as opposed to, and it's just the nature of the country. It's very unique compared to, let's say, the UK or the US,
mm-hmm.
Where you don't have a huge expat population, but in the UAE you
sure,
do,
right.
and that money goes a long way in their home countries.
Sure. Absolutely. So we don't know the actual gaming tax rate. I'm assuming they've got some kind of understanding that it's not going to be too high. But we do have to understand that corporate taxes. How does that work?
So corporate taxation is a relatively new introduction in the UAE, and it's come at a timely season for this gaming ecosystem because we now have a corporate tax level of 9%.
Okay.
and that's over your profits of 300 odd thousand, which is so easy to gain. So 9% is money on the table in terms of the non-oil revenue that the country is trying to generate, which I think is incredible. But of course, you know, with the lottery, you know, revenues as well, there will be some tax level. There are a lot of rumors in the market, but nothing has been publicly spoken of.
So you have the, your history in banking, so you're well established to be able to you know join the payment processors and the investors and things like that to the active structures that are going on in the UAE.
And you've touched on a really important point in terms of why I made that pivot from banking compliance into gaming compliance, because I see both, you know, ecosystem is very similar. It's all, it comprises of financial transactions, and financial transactions that have rules around compliance, AML, etc. So using the knowledge that I've had in the UK and the US, where I've worked in large banks, Citibank, you know, Bank of America, Barclays, HSBC, so the big boys that have global presence, it's been able to understand how best to have the right controls, operationalize them as well with stakeholders that exist right through the ecosystem. So a lot of people talk about operators, but they don't talk much about payment processors and the banks. So let me give you an example. So you might have an operator that, you know, gets a license in the UAE, but have you considered which bank would be willing to bank with them?
Because
their risk appetite is quite low for gaming, because again, it's been a banned activity, and banks do not open accounts for people that are conducting business in a banned activity, right? However, the banks are not yet comfortable with an activity that was previously banned. The question is, what controls do you have in place that actually allows the bank to manage their internal risk? Because there's a contagion effect. If you do take on a client that does not have a similar control process to what you have in banking. So there's a lot of education that needs to happen at those levels with all the different stakeholders at a different value system. And this is another area that I do want to, you know, collaborate with banks, payment processors, to ensure that they're supportive of this new ecosystem. Another example I can draw on is for lottery. Lottery is socially accepted. We do have, everybody plays the lottery in the UAE now. I have a bank, I've got a bank account with an Islamic bank. I cannot use that card to play the lottery.
Really? No.
Because again, it's not acceptable business. So I have to use my other bank card. So in the UAE, you have conventional banking and you have Islamic banking. So the conventional banks, yes, you can use their cards, but the Islamic bank that I bank with, I cannot.
That's interesting. But it's probably good, I mean, because then you can see exactly where it's going.
Absolutely. And for them, so for an Islamic bank, they're governed by the UAE regulatory system, which is the UAE Central Bank and, you know, ESCA. However, they're also governed by the Islamic Sharia principles, which again, you know, gaming sector cannot perceive and see. So it's the multi-layered regulatory framework, which is important that GCGRA are cognizant of the regulatory structures that apply to all the different stakeholders that would exist in the ecosystem. Make sense?
So let's talk about the cultural aspects. I mean, the UAE is a predominantly Muslim country. You know, they have strict regulations about gambling. But I was thinking it's kind of like the way the Mormons were in this country. And I'll tell you, if you go in a Vegas casino, you'll see a lot of Mormons dealing cards or in the executive level. So so there's a lot of job opportunities then for the culture there as well.
Yes, absolutely. And there are lots of opportunities with any emerging sector. There are a lot of job opportunities. It just requires everyone to be open-minded. Open-minded in terms of diversification of skill set. So I often say that there is no gaming expert in the UAE. And people are like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, everybody has to be imported. So even the GCGRA and the senior management there, they've had to come in, right? Even myself, I'm not a gaming expert, but I'm a compliance expert because I've moved and pivoted from an established and mature sector into gaming. So everybody brings something into it.
Right.
So the senior managers at GCGRA would bring a UK-US perspective, which is mature, and that is of value to the UAE. I would bring my banking background as well, which is of value. So I would say anybody coming into it would come with something, and that would be advantageous to the ecosystem as it evolves as well. And that would accelerate growth in the UAE. We would get there quicker than any other place because we've got technology as well that's becoming is an enabler. You have you have open-mindedness, diversification of people's mindsets, and as well you've got a lot more cash moving around.
And then there's a lot of other opportunities there. Well, for service companies, you know, they're going to be huge hotels and they have linens and furniture and things of that nature.
Very true.
So I guess there's a lot of opportunity in the UAE itself for that to occur.
Absolutely. So, I mean, UAE is big on hotels. The tourism and hospitality, it's the five-star experience that you get there is like what you never experience anywhere else. But this is going to magnify that. People will not just come because the hotels are amazing and the hospitality is amazing, but there's additional fun. So you would decide, okay, I want to have a full-blown, robust holiday. Where should I go? And the UAE are giving an end-to-end experience for travelers, which I think is quite smart.
Sure, absolutely. What is like the distance between some of these bigger cities like Dubai and some of the others?
Abu Dhabi, yes.
So
Abu Dhabi to Dubai, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's around the corner. We go there for dinner. We go to, I live in Abu Dhabi. I go to Dubai for dinner and I come home straight away. So people work in Dubai, live in Abu Dhabi and vice versa.
Okay.
So in terms of the ability, the mobility, it's quite easy.
Okay, so people, a company that would build a casino, a good example, but it's not in either one of those cities, but it's easy to get to.
It's very easy to get to. So you would go to Ras Al Khaimah just for the for a weekend trip, and you can go the same day and come back. So, you know, the roads, the road network is phenomenal in the UAE. Large roads, comfortable cars, and just easy to drive through.
Yeah, you don't have winter weather there.
No, you don't. But actually, it feels very cold at the moment. I know it's not Barcelona cold, but it was about 14 degrees when I left Abu Dhabi, so it felt a little bit chilly.
Not a beach day, then.
No, not a beach day.
So, in your company, you have Responsible Gaming as part of your name, which I obviously I've been in many jurisdictions. That's always their one of their first focuses. How are they approaching that in your country?
So, in Abu Dhabi, Responsible Gaming was a name that I chose intentionally. Because it's a name that is very dear to my heart. So whilst I appreciate that gaming has its history, one of the challenges that people face right now is about the addictive nature of it, and that is what, you know, a lot of advertisers target. So for me, for this ecosystem to truly deliver value in a country like the UAE and demonstrate that the forbidden nature of it isn't a concern anymore is to ensure that the players and you know are at the heart of it, and responsible gaming is really it. So when I go to talks and people say to me, oh, you work in gaming now, oh, we're not very comfortable with that, I actually explain to them that I'm here to resolve that discomfort. Responsible gaming is there's entertainment, but we need to make sure we do it responsibly, and the stakeholders are held to high account to ensure that it is done and delivered in that way, and there's a lot of visibility around the need for it. So I chose that name intentionally. So whilst I'm also starting in the UAE, you know, one can expand beyond that within the Middle East region as the market develops.
So you would be very comfortable representing some of the agencies that kind of promote responsible gaming?
Absolutely, and those are the people that I'm really interested in collaborating with, is that you know, regulatory compliance is the key part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-money laundering is another part of it,
right.
And responsible gaming is the other part.
Yeah.
And we cannot do one without the other. So in bigger countries and companies, you know, regulatory compliance is separate from, you know, RG.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Middle East, RG is such an integral part of demonstrating that the regulation is working,
right.
Because of the cultural nuances that we've inherited,
right.
That we've started with, that were, you know, stumbling blocks. We, if we don't show that RG is a regulatory point,
right.
Then people will not feel as comfortable.
Right.
So it's part and parcel.
And I imagine the companies that are developing gaming properties down there, that's going to be one of their top priorities.
Front and center. Front and center. They need to be, and whilst they're developing, you know, RG and showing that there's a lot that's being done and to embed it within their processes, there's another part of it that, you know, we should not miss that trick, is how do you educate the public on the tools, the responsible gaming tools that are there and embedded?
Right.
Because the public are still nervous.
Sure, right.
And there's got to be a socialization piece, a PR piece,
right.
Around RG, and this is something that I'm definitely passionate about. Training even at within universities,
right? Yeah.
Because these, you know, guys are going to be playing it.
Sure.
They're already playing,
yeah.
It.
Well, you know, we've seen that in many gaming jurisdictions where universities spring up and they have a whole section of their universities that have gaming education courses. So
absolutely.
That's another.
Absolutely. So it's important that we look at how best to socialize responsible gaming as a concept,
mm-hmm.
as the market is expanding.
Right, right.
To get people quite comfortable with the notion of it.
Okay, great. Okay, one more question. How fast do you think this is going to proceed, say, over the next 5 years? I know the Wynn's not supposed to open until what, 2028, so that's already 3 years from now. So are we going to see another casino beyond that within the next 5 years, do you think?
So I believe that there's going to be a measured approach,
mm-hmm.
rather than an accelerated approach.
Right.
Again, going back to the point of socialization, in terms of the physical presence, what goes on online might be a little bit more, there might be a bit more speed because you don't need to build a physical infrastructure.
Right.
And of course the perception is reality. The public perception around a physical premises versus an online presence is
okay.
Different, right? So
right.
I feel like the physical presence might be a little bit more of a, you know, slower pace,
mm-hmm.
than the online stuff. But again, going back to diversification of the revenue streams, this is money on the table,
yeah.
Right?
Right?
And if they don't participate and do it in a regulated fashion, you will have illegal and unregulated sectors,
right, right.
springing up without the controls in place, without the responsible gaming structures in place. So I think it's actually in the best interest,
sure.
of, you know, the regulators to actually, you know, put their arms around it and protect the players who definitely want to play.
Right. And I guess you don't want to oversaturate it either. You want to see how one casino works and maybe approve the next one, things like that.
Absolutely. You need to. And again, you need to build the property.
Right, yeah.
So casinos are not easy to build. You know, you need to build. You also need to get people comfortable with the build. You need to also hire competent staff, train them,
mm-hmm.
and then open for business. It doesn't happen overnight.
I interviewed one of the guys who's going to run the Wynn Casino, and he said they're going to have to change on a dime because they're not sure exactly who's going to come there or what games they're going to like,
exactly.
or things of that nature. So.
Exactly. Plus, how about the language?
Oh, exactly.
Because
right.
existing players, there will be language barriers, so you also
mm-hmm.
need to make sure you're able to recruit people that can speak multiple languages. And to the point you made, who are the initial visitors?
Right.
Then you need to provide the right language to be able to help them to enjoy the gaming. So I for me, these are exciting times. Even though I don't come from a gaming background, one thing I do love is innovation of regulators. When I started my career in 2002 in the UK, that was when the banking regulator was newly formed.
Right.
So I did this journey with them, and it's always very exciting because this is where there's partnership.
Mm-hmm.
They hear from, you know, the sector, we hear from them, they regulate. It's almost like, you know, you're trying to repair a car as it's moving.
Right. Yeah.
And this is pretty much what the
exactly.
GCGRA are doing. It's like, the market expects speed, mm-hmm. and they're still drafting, they're right. formulating, they're testing. And, you know, this is where people like us that have been on this journey, you know, really commend mm-hmm. what they are doing.
Right.
And know that they are here at ICE, and this is their first ICE as GCGRA. And it's exciting to see the interest as right. well that they're getting. And I'm sure that they're proud of the work they've done
right.
so far.
Right, great. Yeah. Well, Sandra, thanks for stopping by here at ICE in Barcelona. It's been exciting to see you. We've been communicating virtually, but it's nice to meet in person. And good luck. I think you're in the right place at the right time there.
Thank you. Thank you. I think this is definitely serendipity.
Yeah.
You know, this is the best time. And I'm really excited about the prospect of doing something new and helping the sector
yeah.
grow using a skill that I love and using a skill that I'm really good at. So.
Right.
Very Thank good. You.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roger.
To read more about the topics presented in this week's podcast, visit ggbmagazine.com. To subscribe to GGB's executive summary, go to ggbnews.com and sign up. Don't miss any edition of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Spotify, Amazon, or Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.